Maybe there's a, can I put those nipple things on my knees? Will that help me?
I don't think so.
I don't know what we're doing here. Hey, what's up? It's Andrew Huang. I'm on the first podcast. What's up?
Welcome to the first podcast, Andrew.
Thanks for joining us for another exciting episode of the first podcast. My name is Joe. I'm going to be your co-host today. And with me, as always, I have Lars.
This episode is sponsored by Amazon, Audible, and patrons like yourself. We'll go ahead and talk about that a little bit later. Andrew, can you give us the elevator summary of just who you are and what you do?
Yeah, for sure. Well, thanks for having me, first of all. I'm a YouTuber, musician, just general music experimenter. And on my YouTube channel, I kind of just post about the types of musical shenanigans I'm getting up to. And it really covers like all different parts of creating music, but definitely a heavy focus on music production and writing and also a lot of different genres. And then making music with weird, usually non-musical things like balloons and pants and water and meth lab equipment.
Now, Andrew, before we go any further, the chat is saying Andrew has a very nice tongue. Can you weigh in on that?
I mean, I've been enjoying it.
That's such a weird thing to say, but all right, that's great.
I think it's working.
What do you mean by that exactly?
Things taste good and I mean, what else am I really doing with it? I can articulate words generally.
Yeah. The chat is saying that's a fantastic answer. And the chat, you can go ahead and tune into these episodes live, by the way, guys, at discord.t1podcast.com.
Discord.t1podcast.com.
I really never thought about it before, but I guess having a fully functional tongue, we really take that for granted.
We do. Yo, all of us can just enjoy and be grateful for our tongues right now.
Well, some of us, but yeah.
Does the tongue play into the ability to create music?
I guess it does. I guess, you know, singing, making sounds. Mm-hmm.
Joe, did you not know the answer to that question?
No, I was just lobbing an easy one just to...
Okay.
As a matter of fact, the tongue plays a huge role in making music.
Okay, so, by the way, I was noticing this when we were doing some research earlier, talking on the voice chat on the server. A lot of people say that you seem to be immune to the effects of aging.
Oh, well, that's nice to hear.
What's your secret, man? Yeah, why do you look exactly the same as you did back when you did the pink fluffy unicorns? It's like identical. It's amazing.
That's pretty wild. Yeah, I mean, I don't really know. I don't do too much crazy stuff to my face. You know, I wash it now and then.
Oh.
The end.
You wash it.
Now and then.
He washes his face.
Good.
Now and then.
Hot tip, guys.
Hot tip, wash your face once in a while.
If you want to be immune to the effects of aging, wash your face now and again.
Yeah, not too much, though. That could be the problem.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I hear it actually like dries out your skin a little bit if you're not careful and you overdo it.
You have dry, ugly skin? You might be washing your face too much. Stay tuned at 11.
Oh.
I don't know why I'm doing like a newscaster thing.
Yeah, that's weird, Joe, but that's fine. Okay, so speaking of hygiene and the coronavirus, in a little segue there, I wanted to talk about Ganglia, because that's not just a new album. It's also kind of a relief effort that's really relevant at the moment. I don't really have a question here. I just wanted to give you a chance to spread the word about it.
Oh, well, sure. I appreciate that. I mean, so yeah, I released an album a week or so ago, week and a half, maybe, Ganglia, which is very, it's kind of bizarre. It's instrumental, electronic, a lot of crazy sound design. And I was planning to release it at the end of March. And then when all this pandemic stuff started happening, just felt like I'm going to drop it anyway, but I'll take all the proceeds from it and we'll find a charity. I ended up settling on Direct Relief. They were very, very highly ranked on Charity Navigator, which is kind of what I go to, and they're basically sending lots of medical supplies to wherever they're needed most, and they don't have any kind of political siding or anything like that. And yeah, so far we have over $2,000 raised, and I've pledged to match that. And
that's amazing.
That's what's happening. Yeah. So
wow, thank you so much for doing that.
Yeah, no, I'm I mean, it's just such a crazy time, and I felt like if there's something that I can do to kind of feel useful when, you know, I'm mostly just sitting at home, and you know, my life is not too different from normal, just being a work from home music producer, YouTuber person, but you know, you see all this stuff happening and you just want to try and do something.
So how does it work? People buy the album and then the, or is it like a pay what you want or something like that? Or how does it work?
Yeah. So all of the streaming and download revenue on the usual platforms will go towards direct relief. And then on Bandcamp, I was saying that it was just going to be for March, but I think I'm just going to continue it because why not? It's not like we solved the pandemic yet.
Yeah.
So on Bandcamp, it's pay what you want, and Bandcamp is where I'll be matching the pledges that come in. So, yeah, I'm gonna keep doing that.
And is it just your first and last name on there?
That's right, Andrew Huang, HUANG.bandcamp.com.
Check it out today.
Yeah, I'll put a link in the description. This brings up a good point, Joe. Do you remember we were talking about the grind track? We were trying to get that identified.
Yeah. But just in case, why don't you talk a little bit more about that?
Okay, so Andrew, there's a bit of a mystery at the moment. I'm actually curious. There's a track in the YouTube audio library called Grind, which I think basically every YouTuber has used at some point because it's a banger.
Is that true?
Yeah, are you that Andrew Huang?
Yeah, I've only seen it pop up in like the occasional random video. I didn't realize it was getting widely used. That's cool. They
Mars, is that?
Yeah.
Yeah, YouTube approached me, and like they've done this with a whole bunch of different YouTube music creators that I know. And they basically pay you to make 10 tracks, and it's completely like a flat fee. So once you hand them over, I guess they kind of belong to YouTube. At any rate, I'm not doing anything else with them, and they get to host them in their audio library, and anybody in the world can use them in their videos with no kind of like copyright or payment or anything like that. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a cool system. A lot of people, I feel like, don't know about the audio library, or not as many as should anyway. And it's a really great thing for adding royalty-free music to your videos.
I wanted to say, first of all, Andrew, thank you for your service with that. That's fantastic. I really appreciate that.
I'm so blown away that it's being used. I thought it was just kind of sitting there.
Well, do you know who Max Mofo is?
I've heard that name.
Hugely successful YouTuber. All right. Uses your track like very frequently. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Someone in the chat says, oh, he wrote that song. Yeah, that's him.
Somebody in the chat uses that song on a podcast that they do.
Which podcast is that?
It's the only, the only TikTok podcast.
Oh, yeah. Who hosts that, Joe?
I host that.
Yeah.
Nice. Me and Jake Trumper and Floral host the only TikTok podcast. And that's the intro music that we use.
Oh, this episode was meant to be. Oh,
that's great.
Getting tickles.
By the way, Andrew, I just wanted to say you really are very creative when it comes to making music.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. No, it's my favorite thing to do, like make music, but make it in a weird way.
On your TikTok feed, for instance, you posted a video in which you're playing a beautiful production quality instrumental music. However, what you're holding is not a musical instrument, but rather a succulent plant called Crassula ovata sunset jade. And I know this because I have that plant. I have that plant in my succulent garden outside.
Mm.
If I walk over to my veranda, I can see sure as night fire, and I've never heard it make such a beautiful sound as in your video. I never knew this whole time I've owned this Crassula ovata sunset jade, the same jade plant you have, that it's capable of making such a beautiful produced music that sounds like horns.
I love that you know what the plant is and that you have a bunch of them, because there's just so much serendipity in this episode. We got that grind track. We got the plant. I was staying at an Airbnb and they had a bunch of those really beautiful plants in their yard. And one of them had just like broken off and was kind of lying there. and it's the dumbest thing. I just picked it up and I was like, is there some kind of content I could make with this?
The Crassula ovata sunset jade.
And there, yeah, put my mouth right on it, put a sound effect on it, content.
I guess what I'm saying is...
You're a fan of his?
I feel jaded.
Oh, jeez.
I appreciated that.
It's jokes like that, Joe, that make...
That is the name of the plant, though. I asked my brother, who's an expert on succulents, I was like, hey, what's the name of this? And he's like, it's a jade. And I was like, no, what's the scientific name? And he's like, it's a Crassula ovata sunset jade. I was like, okay.
There you go. Okay, so... And by the way, if there's anything specific you want to get to, let us know. Otherwise, we're just going to keep lobbing questions at you because we're curious about stuff.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Well, my one thing right now is I launched an online course, so we can talk about that anytime. But otherwise, you know, we covered ganglia, new album, doing so much good for the corona situation. But yeah, no, I'm happy to keep hacking away at these questions.
Okay. So... I'm going to lob this one out here because this is the basic question that it is extremely basic, I realize, but it's everyone who's listening to this is going to want to know the answer to it, so I have to ask it. What's it like being someone with hearing loss who does something you need to hear for a living? Can you explain how you've managed to overcome that?
Well, I guess it's interesting because so if you don't know, yeah, I'm partially deaf and it's mostly in the lower bass frequencies, which is like a bit different from like just the general hearing loss that happens to most people as they get generally like quite a bit older. But you usually lose high end hearing. And for some reason, I woke up one day when I was 20 and everything sounded a little bit different. And I ended up realizing that in both of my ears, but particularly on my right side, I just couldn't hear that much bass anymore. And, so I was pretty young when that happened. So it was like even before I had really done anything career-wise with music. So I guess I have just navigated this whole thing that way. And so it wasn't like a new challenge. It was just sort of something that had already become part of my life by the time I was doing music more professionally. But yeah, it's been an interesting kind of journey because I pretty quickly just figured out as many workarounds as I could. And I would like put my hands on my speakers and like, you can feel the bass more than you can the treble that way. So that kind of worked out. And then, you know, finding things like Sub Pack and, it's a device called an Omeo that like can like, actually a lot of companies do this kind of thing now, but you can do a really tailored EQ for each of your ears that, you know, applies to all the music you play through that system. And then, you kind of hear a little bit more of a true to reality version because they've just changed all the EQ balance to kind of fit your hearing profile. So things like that have helped me get a little bit closer to like what normal hearing would be. And then otherwise, yeah, just like asking my other producer friends to help me out on, you know, checking mixes and whatnot.
Now I'm curious because I remember I was watching a video, I think it was the one from this winter, in which you talked about how it had kind of gotten worse, and a couple questions about that. Number one, do the doctors say that it's ever going to get to a point where you won't be able to hear, or is it just always going to be slightly impaired?
Yeah, so far, no one said that it's going to be completely gone. And you know, interestingly, for close to 15 years, it was pretty much in stasis. And that, you know, I would have, this is the bizarre thing, every once in a while, like once every few years, it would get a lot better for like a week. And then the thing that I made that video that you referred to about was in the past few months, it's just started to fluctuate a little bit more often. And so it's weird because in a way you could say it's getting better because it's like, oh, for a few days at a time or maybe just one day at a time, I'll be able to hear a lot more bass. But then at the same time, because it's fluctuating so much, it actually makes it a lot more difficult for me to work day to day just because I don't actually... Like, I have no consistency to rely on, so mixing stuff is, like, just way less reliable. But I've hired someone to help me with that now, this guy, Pusher, who is also a Toronto producer. Fantastic kind of, like, electronic pop future-bassy stuff that he does. But, he's crushing my mixes these days.
You also mentioned that originally the doctors weren't able to diagnose you. Did you ever actually get a diagnosis, or is it just hearing loss, like general?
Yeah, no, I've bounced around to a lot of different like audiologists, ENTs, and no one can really explain what's going on. There's like, I had tubes in my ears when I was a really small kid, like maybe 5 years old. And that's like to deal with ear infections where you have like fluid that builds up and it needs to drain. So there's definitely probably a connection to that. But yeah, no one can really say like, why is it that it is the way it is? And why is it suddenly starting to change? I haven't found any answers after going to a few doctors.
Interesting.
Andrew, can I play a note on my harmonica that's really low, and you tell me if you can if you can hear it?
Oh, sure. I feel like I could probably hear the whole range of the harmonica though.
All right, let's give this a try. Did you hear anything?
Nope.
That's because I server deafened you, right?
That was kind of a dick thing to do, Joe.
It'll be funny in post. Oh, boy. We'll fix it in post.
Yeah. Yeah. The harmonica is pretty high pitched, though, so I think you could probably at least hear all that, Joe.
This was the note, by the way. Which obviously you could hear, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Obviously.
So you like to make videos where you're kind of helping people, either understanding like kind of uncommon problems that they might sometimes face, or, you know, maybe like even these, like, you know, in 30 minutes, understanding like all of music theory in 30 minutes.
Well, I wouldn't say all of music theory, but definitely like the fundamentals. Yeah.
I would be curious if you'd be up for a challenge.
Yeah. What's that?
Speed the video up, learn music theory in 30 seconds.
I would love to see people That's do silly. That challenge. See what they get.
I think that'll really attract the short attention span people.
But yeah, no, I mean, I think that theory video is like a great, I don't know, like a timeless video for me. I'm so glad people are getting a lot out of it. But yeah, my whole thing is like, music is so fun for me, but understanding how it works is also a big part of it. So being able to like share the kind of small details and little things that I'm doing that never get talked about, but I think are so fascinating, is kind of where my channel started to take off. And it was cool to see that all these other people were interested in that aspect of things too.
It really is so interesting. You know, even the timing of like which syllables get emphasized from line to line. I don't know what it's called. Some kind of timing. All these little things that all go together, like you were saying.
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting. Like, I've been in the room with like some pop writers, and those are the sessions where things are the most intense, because people like pick apart every line, and like there's always, you know, you're trying to avoid S's because that sibilant sound is a little harsher, and like everything's so calculated in a way, but also, you know, at the same time, there's so much room for like spontaneity. But you kind of, there's always this point where you're just like working with individual words and syllables, and it's pretty wild how much thought does go into some of these songs.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I picked up on a keyword a couple minutes ago that you mentioned about timeless content. I'd like to go into that a little bit, because on most of the later episodes of the show, we're trying to get to the bottom of a question. It's not really a defined question, but just how to content create. And you mentioned that you think your videos are fairly, or at least that one video is fairly timeless. And I actually have an observation right now where I noticed that most of your videos are not time sensitive at all. You could pretty much listen to, I mean, or watch at least like 80% of them, if not more, at any point, and you'd still get the same value from it. Do you do that on purpose? Do you avoid trying to do things that are topical?
Yeah, I do think about that. And it's, I guess, just what's more interesting to me is, you know, something that'll be valuable and interesting for a longer period of time, I guess. I have done the occasional video where it's like covering a song that's really hot, or, you know, dissecting a song that's popular. But I guess mostly, like, I'm interested in creating my own original stuff. And so finding the ways to talk about that in an interesting way generally leads to like these timeless principles of music, you know, things that work and don't work and all that. And so, yeah, in part, it's what I would like to be doing, and in part, it's just kind of like the default that ends up happening.
Mm-hmm.
I was watching your third oldest video on YouTube. It was an Old Spice remix. Do you like
the smell of adventure?
Oh, yeah. Whoa. Haven't thought about that in years.
Neither had I. I had forgot all about those Old Spice commercials and how ubiquitous they were around 2010 or so. So thank you for posting that.
Those were like, that was one of the first big internet moments, I feel like. Honestly, they were so like ubiquitous, like you said. And just the first like ad campaign that took advantage of, I guess, social media, for lack of a better word, like having people send in things and then they had their actor in the studio for a few days, I think it was, just like making these Old Spice, you know, little YouTube clips.
Memes.
Based on real people's comments. It's wild.
Wasn't it, didn't the makers of like some famous show make it, Tim and Eric? Didn't they make those commercials?
Oh, I didn't know that.
I think so.
Maybe.
Lars, you remember those commercials?
Yeah. I have no idea if that's true or not, but yeah, I do remember what you guys are talking about. That was quite a phenomenon. Andrew, other than your content being fairly timeless, what do you think it is that's attracting almost 2 million people to your channel?
Man, I do not know. I really don't. I mean, I try to make good videos, but okay. I mean, I'm on YouTube a whole bunch and I see all different kinds of content, and there's so much stuff that I think is great that's not performing well. There's so much stuff that I have no idea what the appeal is, and it's getting like 5 or 10 million views. So, man, I can't tell you.
Well, yeah, I mean,
your all time views are in the hundreds of millions, I think.
Yeah, I think 200 and something.
That's pretty good.
We were talking earlier about the fact that you had fairly clean content. Do you think that has some appeal to it? Do you think that drives a more mass audience? Or would you, I guess my question would be, if someone's doing YouTube, should they keep it clean, do you think? Would you recommend that?
I guess so. I think that like for a majority of audiences and types of content and creators and all that, clean would probably be a better bet. And I think it's kind of like, it's a place of extremes. So if you're going to be doing kind of vulgar content, then make it really vulgar and like make that your thing, and all the vulgar people will love it. But it's hard to kind of be in a middle ground, undefined spot where like maybe I guess if the level of vulgarity is inconsistent, then, you know, it's part of, I guess that takes away from your brand. I didn't really thought about that before, but yeah. So being clean, I guess, as a, I don't know, as you'd call it a stance or whatever, as a strategy, might be the safest thing to do. Also, I think there's like things with demonetization. If you swear too much, there's something where like, I can't remember the exact words, but like, if you don't have a swear word in your title and you don't say anything worse than shit, and you don't say shit in the first 30 seconds, something like that, you can still monetize. And then beyond that, it starts to like, you know, you limit the types of companies that will advertise against your videos.
Okay. Because I've noticed a lot of the channels that I've followed over the years, specifically, I'm kind of more into the vulgar stuff myself, but I've noticed that virtually all of them have stopped swearing, or they at least censor it. So it seems like that's kind of the play at this point.
Right. Yeah. If people are pulling back, then they used to be a lot more profane. It's probably the monetization angle.
We just have our podcast on iTunes. We just have it set to explicit, just so, you know, no 6-year-olds are checking it out by chance. But yeah,
in that way, nobody can complain, oh, they never said they were going to use curse words, and so I listened to it in the office, and now I got fired. I don't know.
Well, because they actually have it set up on Apple Podcasts that if you have vulgar content, or if you have explicit content and you don't market as such, they can actually take your episodes or your show down. So that's good. They're kind of tight with that sometimes, so we try to be careful.
Andrew, have you ever been recognized like walking down the street? Or
several times a month.
Anything out of the ordinary, or that you have like a favorite instance?
I mean, it's always just like really nice people who are into music. I'm trying to think if there's ever been like a particularly weird one, but I don't think so. I mean, it's happened in all different kinds of places. Like airport cafe, like just down the street, whatever. But yeah, it's just like super kind people who are some type of musician usually themselves, and they just tell me they enjoy the content. I guess probably the weirdest one would have been I was just walking around in downtown Toronto, and then I just heard someone like yelling my name, and they were across the street, and like
that's cool.
You know, didn't seem like they wanted to come over and say hi or anything. It was just like they saw me. They're like, Andrew Wong, and went on with their day.
Ooh, it's saying in the chat, people are saying that they want us to swear more. I don't want to just force it, guys.
We'll swear if it feels natural. Thank you for sharing that story. Have you ever been recognized and you weren't really like in the mood, and you're just like, oh, hey, yeah, it's me.
Oh, it's usually fine. No, I mean, no one, cool. Thankfully. So there are definitely, if it happens more at shows that you get people who, you know, start talking to you and really never want to stop. That's been my experience more, you know, if I'm manning the merch table or something like that. But I don't think I've ever had a problem with just like randomly, you know, being on the same bus as somebody or whatever. And then there was a weird conversation. No, I'm happy to chat with folks.
All right. Cool.
Hey, Joe.
Yeah.
Merch, selling products, sponsorships. Let's go ahead and talk about our sponsor, Joe.
You know what, Lars? I think that's a great idea. It's
thank you.
It's about time we do that.
Yeah. Guys, Audible has a proposition for you. They want to give you a free book today. That's free, as in beer, not free, as in freedom. Seriously, just, it's a free book. Any book you want on the Amazon audiobook library for free.
You know, Lars,
all they ask you to do is check out audibletrial.com/T1podcast. Joe, do you have something to add?
During this quarantine, I have been so bored that I have read and finished two books now. Two books, not one, but two. And I'm on my third book. And I wish I could have somebody read them to me. You know, I don't have time to be reading all this. It's only because it's the quarantine, but what happens when the quarantine's over? You know, I'm still going to want to consume literature, but I'm not going to have the time anymore. And even during the quarantine, I just wish there was somebody to read for me. Is there a way that we could, is there anything like that?
Is there a service where people can read a book to you? Yeah, that's what we're selling right now. Audibletrial.com/T1podcast.
Andrew, have you, let me start over. Andrew, okay. What's it like to talk to a puppet during an interview?
Oh, that was weird, man.
Have you ever done anything like that before?
Man, yeah, hanging with Reed Stefan was really interesting. He's a very good YouTuber. I was filming some stuff with him, and every single thing he did was like one take, perfect. But yeah, he's a puppet, and It weirdly, we did like something like a 45-minute, hour-long maybe podcast, and it ended up just feeling normal, like I was talking to a person, even though I was looking at this puppet, and I knew my friend Reed was lying underneath the table holding his arm up for 45 minutes. Yeah, I don't know. Humans are just so empathetic. We just, you know,
full of emotion.
Look at Wilson. We'll just befriend anything.
So, follow-up question. Do you, it sounds like you had a good experience talking to that puppet.
Very good. Yeah.
Do you suppose it would be a similar experience talking to the puppet government installed in Strasbourg, France during the Second World War?
Whoa. A lot of things I don't know about in that question. So I'm going to say yes.
You don't have to answer. That was,
yo, you're a weird guy.
That was just a dumb one.
All right. Thanks for that, Joe. Oh, I have a better question.
Strasbourg, okay. France. How topical, Joe.
Why did you randomly say that?
Strasbourg. All right. Because there was a puppet government installed. I don't know. I don't know. It did have a puppet government.
Okay, I want to talk more about content creation, and this, I guess, is kind of a different part of it.
Daft Pina in the chat says, Strasbourg, France is timeless.
That's one of our previous guests, Daft Pina, so thanks for tuning in, bud. So I want to preface this by saying, as a host and editor of this podcast over time, the experience and expertise I've acquired has been mostly a blessing, but also a little bit of a curse, Because now I hear all the tiny little imperfections on YouTube videos, other podcasts, stuff like that. Sometimes like it'll actually kill my enjoyment of something because the editing is just like distractingly bad. And I'm curious if the same applies to you. Does your musical expertise affect your ability to enjoy other music?
Yeah, no, I totally get what you mean. I think that I kind of go through phases where it's like an affliction. It's like worse sometimes and not as bad sometimes. And I feel like in some ways I can turn it on and off. Like if I just decide, you know, I really want to be analytical about this, or I really just want to like sit back and enjoy this, I can kind of for the most part be in the mindset that I want to be. But I do think there was a good few years, I think, right after I had kind of like cemented a lot of my knowledge, where it was like I was only in that side of noticing the seams and the puppet strings. So yeah, I don't know. I think you kind of go in and out of it, or at least I did.
Yeah, I was just remembering a situation where a podcast that I used to listen to back in the day, which is called Hello Internet, very popular show, run by CGP Grey and Brady Heron. They're both YouTubers themselves. But I listened to it the other day after a couple of years, and I realized that Gray was talking on a blue snowball and it sounded terrible. And I was like, ah. And if you guys do in the audience do any sort of music production or broadcasting, you'll know that a blue snowball is not the best microphone ever. But yeah. Joe, I feel like I've been hogging all the questions, by the way. Do you want to toss any at them?
Well, there was something I wanted to talk about, but I don't think you're gonna like it, Lars.
Oh no.
It's a question, but it's kind of like changing the subject.
So it's like a bullshit question, or what are you talking about?
No, it's a real question, but should I just ask it?
Okay, I'm just gonna brace myself for whatever this is.
So this is a question for Andrew. Yesterday I went on a 10-mile run wearing a backpack. And my backpack was tied around my chest with a strap. And after about five miles or so...
Joe, let me cut you off real quick. So let's assume someone's listening to this. They've never heard of us before. Are they going to care about this story?
It'll make them laugh.
Okay. All right. Go for it.
So after about 5 miles or so, my nipple starts chafing so badly, I had to take off my shirt. Now, I understand marathon runners wear nipple tape to avoid bleeding nipples. And my question for you is, do you ever go on a run?
Yeah, I enjoy running, but I don't go very far. My knees can't handle it. Maybe there's a... Can I put those nipple things on my knees? Will that help me?
I don't think so. I don't think that's exactly...
Worth a try, maybe, but... Yeah, no, I go for like a couple miles.
Well, that's still pretty good.
Just to enjoy it.
Why do you guys do this? Why? You don't... Okay, so jogging is optional. So why do you guys do it? What's the point?
I love that jogging is optional.
Yeah.
You know what? It's like it's just enough that you're doing with your body that you can't think about too much else. Well, not too much else, but you don't think about, you don't get distracted. You can like kind of zone in on one particular thing. So I feel like I do a lot of good thinking, a lot of good like figuring out what to do next in my project kind of stuff in my little 20-30 minute run.
Oh, you know what? I take it all back, because I just realized if you're jogging semi-regularly, at least, that will keep you healthy. Ergo, that's probably why you still look basically the same since you were when you were, 25? So that's actually probably a good idea.
For me, it's about relaxing as well and staying in shape. And, you know, but it's just also just for fun. Like, it's fun to improve at something. And running is one of those things where you can make like micro adjustments to your posture and everything and see how it affects how you run. And it's kind of like playing a video game to me. Like, you get better at it as you go. And I don't know. I think
that's a pretty dorky answer, Joe. That has not convinced me at all, but that's fine.
I'm not trying to convince anybody. That's just, I think it's fun.
I think you guys are both completely insane still, but that's fine. We can move on. Okay.
Sure. I'll throw this back to you, Lars.
Okay. Throw what?
I asked a question. I don't know.
Oh, okay. You're saying you want me to... Okay.
Yeah, I want you to ask the next question.
Okay. So a certain someone who is our agent sent me a video earlier, in which it turns out that you have a connection to a certain sweaty boy, Frank Jevsee.
Yeah, Frank and I met like several years ago at this point, and we did a couple videos together.
Mm. We've had him on the show before. We've gone to Exomania last year where we saw him perform live. That guy's such a goofy, fun person, and he sweats a lot, and it's just great. I think he's a fantastic dude.
Yeah, he's so unique, such a great energy. Mm. Yeah, we had the weirdest day together, like making carne asada fries and making music with the carne asada fries, and he's kind of on another planet.
Oh, wee woo. The people in the comments said that wasn't carne asada. That was actually a different kind of meat.
Oh, damn. Well, Frank told me it was carne asada fries. I trusted him so hard. Now everything's shattered.
What kind of meat was it? Like spam? Like what? Eggs?
Oh no, they were just saying like it wasn't proper carne asada.
Was it like fish?
It was just steak, but I guess they're being a little snobby.
I did get to give him a hug after he performed one of his sets, and it was such an awesome sweaty experience.
Yeah, he does sweat a lot. I guess it was worth it in the end. By the way, Andrew, I noticed how well you were able to pull off the kind of goofy meme-y vibe that he did that Frank is famous for. You should consider doing more of that. I really enjoyed the style of comedy on that video. That was great.
Yeah, you know what? I really like that stuff, but then I was like spread in so many different directions for so long that I kind of just decided to focus a bit more. And I would say that I'm still, you know, a little bit eclectic and all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
But I did just kind of slowly get away from that particular flavor. Mm-hmm. Just because it makes certain people not take you seriously in certain ways. And I was, you know, trying to do my music thing. So yeah, it was fine. And it's kind of like, I hate thinking about branding, but it does end up being important, and you end up having a brand whether you do it deliberately or not. And so I just realized like, let's focus on what I most want to focus on, even though all the meme content is fun.
It's interesting that you said that, because you were saying that you have a brand whether you try to have one or not. And you're saying you don't like to focus on it if you can, but being someone in the position that you're in, do you have any just like general tips in terms of maintaining a good brand image in the, I guess, in the modern 2020 internet?
I mean, I'm not doing this as much as I should, but I can definitely see how all that branding stuff works, and how, you know, the degree that I have done it has worked for me, which is basically, you know, setting up your audience's expectations as narrowly almost as you can and to really be able to deliver on that. You know, like if it's kind of like, I guess, a lot of things in business where if you find something that's working, then you know start doing that way more, ignore the other stuff, and keep on refining that one thing. And I think branding is sort of along similar lines, where it's about knowing which of the things that you're delivering is like having the biggest impact, and then like just going hard on that.
I was looking at your actual branding, by the way, and I really liked the, it's pretty basic, it's pretty minimalist, like you just have yourself and then there's like a solid color. I really like the, it's like a blue and a, it's somewhere between blue and green, I don't know the exact color.
Yeah,
but then there's the pinks and stuff. I really like minimalist branding. I'm not sure if you noticed, but our logo is extremely minimalist. I don't know. I like it more than flashy.
Yeah.
Personally.
Yeah, no, totally. I mean, so for me, I think it comes from a couple of places. I do appreciate the kind of minimal vibes. But also it was just like, what's going to be the easiest thing to do? Because I hate dealing with branding, but I realized that it's important. So I was like, all right, going to have a solid background, going to pick my favorite font and like three of my favorite colors. And I'll never think about this again for probably years.
That's the good lazy man's way to do it.
But actually, you know what this reminds me of is when I got married, I got some amazing advice from the person that we hired to cater the wedding.
Mm.
And she said,
you know, you can try and be all like flashy with the way that you present things or your decor, like whatever it is. But if you just keep it super simple and like basic, that can just come off as elegant.
And I was like, you're a genius, mm-hmm. and we're going to save so much money by making it simple. And yeah, I mean, it's completely true. Like, it's almost timeless, you know?
Yeah.
Timeless being a good keyword here. Joe, I think you were going to ask a question.
You had mentioned that if you make too meme-y of videos, like too much memes and joking, people don't take you seriously. Do you find that that's an extension of real life? If you joke too much, people won't take you seriously, like in real life?
I wouldn't say so. I think that, you know, I think of a lot of friends who I have who they just really, they can be very different people on different days, or like they're very positive and funny, but when situation gets serious, they're also, you know, they can take charge, they can make decisions, they can, you know, get serious. I think that it's different when you're dealing with
like an actual brand,
when you're dealing with some kind of product or property or whatever. And I think especially with online creators, I feel like it's harder for them to pivot because we don't have all kinds of like marketing budget behind us the way that, you know, let's say a pop star, every new album has a completely different look and feel and all that. It's definitely different, I think, to kind of bring everybody along for the ride when you're going to dramatically change something when you're just doing it on your own.
Are you saying you need more album art? Guys in the chat, whip something up in MS Paint right now. And feel free to share in the recording chat anything you come up with in MS Paint. I'm sure Andrew will at least consider using as his new logo.
Joe, where was that recording chat?
Discord.t1podcast.com. Let's see what people come up with.
I mean, you're asking a lot of the chat in like a couple minutes. I don't know if they're going to come through with
it's
that.
Fine.
But that's
fine. It doesn't matter. We the joke is over. We're probably not going to come back to this.
Yeah. Okay, so
sorry to put you on the spot, Andrew. I was just doing, you know.
Oh, I'm waiting for that album art.
Okay,
all right.
We'll use all of it.
You heard it here first.
Sure.
Get your art in at discord.t1podcast.com.
Yeah. Okay. So one of the things that you're most known for is the song challenge, and I'm just curious where that all started. How did you get into that being one of your main forms of content?
I was trying to create music with random items, like non-instrument items, you know, just because that was something that was interesting to me. For whatever reason, you know, as a teenager, I kind of got into recording strange things and, you know, I was trying to record songs at home and I would incorporate sounds from like water bottles and paper and pots and pans and stuff like that. And then I actually got hired to make a online commercial for jeans, for this jeans company. And it was pretty bizarre because my YouTube channel was so small at the time, but someone at this jeans company found me and they're like, love what you're doing. Would you do something with our jeans? Like, they gave me carte blanche and they're like, it was a really wild situation. You don't usually have this, but they just came to me and like, we know you'll do something cool. Do something about jeans. And they gave me a small budget and I used a good chunk of it to rent 1,000 pairs of jeans from a thrift shop and made all the sounds I could with these jeans. And when I put that online, it was one of my first videos to have some level of virality to it. And that's when I kind of started thinking about how I could do more videos like that, you know, where I guess when you use only a weird gimmicky item to make the sound, it kind of is more shareable, it's more simple and easy to digest than if you're like, oh, I made this whole track, but I also included the sound of a knife that I put through a delay pedal or whatever. Like, it just gets convoluted that way. So I started doing all these videos where it was like, only using a balloon to make music, only using water to make music. And those all, I think, did pretty well.
Couple people in the chat actually did submit their album art. I see here a silhouette of a pineapple and a face with a squiggly line. Thank you very much for your submissions, guys. We really appreciate
so minimal. It's totally on brand.
Okay, so Andrew, you actually just reminded me of a moment on another podcast called The Create Unknown, in which the guest Psychic Pebbles, his real name is Zach, was talking about not just in terms of branding, but as an artistic choice that constrained work can be very fulfilling. Like, there's something about choosing not to be able to do certain things that makes it much more creative sometimes. Would you agree with that sentiment?
Oh, yeah, 100%. I feel like everybody who's wanting to create something, put some constraints in place and you'll get there so much faster. I think that it kind of just, it just makes your brain work in a different way. And I mean, it's also a lot of fun. But yeah, I've worked with all different kinds of constraints. I think at the very least, having a time constraint is one of the best things. And I'm sure you guys know this from doing the podcast regularly. You know, if you were just kind of like, let's do a podcast, like kind of whenever, it would just fall apart, right?
Yeah, yeah. One of the things that we've chosen not to do so far, and this may change in the future, but we keep this audio only at this point. And I found it to be like a challenge in the editing room to try to add some gags and some humor in post, but not have the advantage of, you know, being able to show audio. So I'm in 100% agreement. I think Zach was right about that. I think if you want to challenge yourself creatively, one of the good ways to do that would be to constrain yourself in some way, just to tell yourself, I'm only going to spend this much time, or, you know, I'm only going to use certain instruments, or in your cases, I watched a really interesting video making a song without being able to hear it. That was a great idea, man. That
was, yeah. I want to do that again sometime. That was super, super weird of an experience.
Yeah, it was weird because like the songs kind of sounded like versions, like alien versions of what songs should be, but not, something was a little off about them. But I was also really surprised that they didn't sound like complete dog shit. Like you guys were able to do something with it, even though they were kind of hilarious.
Yeah, it was really cool that all of us, you know, we had done this for so long that we could kind of get something half decent. But it was so funny that in every single piece, there was at least one super jarring, like ridiculous, unexpected thing that you know, a choice that none of us would have made clearly if we'd been able to hear what was going on.
It's also just kind of interesting because I just lost my train of thought because I was looking at some of these ridiculous album arts in the chat. There's one from Daft Pina that's called Bit of Turquoise, and it's a white square with a bit of turquoise on it.
Bit of turquoise.
Thanks for that, bud. Then there's one from Peridot, which just says AH in a musical note, kind of scribbled on some sort of drawing app.
Hey, that's your initials. Okay.
That's me.
Oh, Andrew Huang. Oh.
You make music.
Here's one from Efria, which is actually kind of it's like a minimalist speed racer type looking dude. Interesting.
You know, I went to a museum in Nottingham, England, and there was an exhibit by an artist, and I don't remember the name, but I remember reading that he said to paint the energy and the movement, not what you see. So all of his paintings are like lines coming off of people and vibes and energy. And that's kind of what that reminds me of. You see the movement. You don't see a face. You see like the glasses are popping out. The hair is flying back in the wind. It's actually really good. I like that one a lot.
I love that. That's a cool way to think about it. I want to find like the musical equivalent.
Oh, this is not really related, but I just wanted to talk about it. Do you have any more plans to put out any more glorious MIDI animals?
Ooh, no. Not at the moment. I think it's such a fun thing, but I also kind of, you know, once I've done something, I just want to do other things. But yeah, I made that MIDI unicorn a while ago that like really took off online, I think mainly on Twitter. But then LG ended up seeing that and sponsored me to do something that would fit one of their ultra wide monitors. And so we settled on a narwhal, the unicorn at sea. Which is also a fun one to do. But man, yeah, those things are pretty painstaking to put together.
I just got that. That's why you did the narwhal. Okay. That makes sense. Cause the they both have the horn. I don't know why I didn't put two and two together before that. Also, there was a moment in that unicorn video. I don't know if you remember this video, like every detail, but there was a moment when you started playing the bad version and you put on like this slasher smile and you started dancing around. Do you remember that? That was really funny.
I do not recall that at all. I'm going to have to watch that video again.
By the way, I think a bunch of people in the chat were wanting to ask live questions. Do we have time for that?
I'm down for some live questions.
Okay. The first one who wanted to come on was Daft Pina. He was itching at the bit. I don't know if he's still here, though. Is he? Yes, he is. Ryan, you're unmuted.
Oh, hello.
Hey.
Hello.
I was just working on another album cover. How fun. But for question time, Andrew, I want to talk about how to keep longevity and happiness about longevity on YouTube.
Okay, wait, can you expand on that?
You've been working. I've been following your stuff for about 5 years, but you've been working on this a lot longer. How do you keep the drive and passion you did when you first started?
Huh. I'm always, you know, switching things up to basically just do what I'm most excited about at the time. And so that's why there's a little bit of inconsistency in my channel. You know, if you watch like from 5 years ago to now, things are definitely different as far as the types of content I'm making. And I think, you know, I've always had this center in music and in wanting to share about the creative process. But I think the reason that I've been able to keep the passion up is because I've been able to keep the excitement up, which is like, you know, making time for the projects that I just feel are most interesting that season, rather than, I don't know, feeling like I've been boxed into one type of thing. Like I used to do, actually, the types of videos that have always performed the best for me were the covers that I did using objects that were mentioned in a song. Like I did Seven Rings, played only on Rings, and I did Can't Feel My Face with dentist equipment, that kind of stuff. So those videos were always doing really great. And then at a certain point, I was just like, I don't feel like doing these anymore. And I was totally fine to just stop doing them because it was not what I felt like doing, rather than, you know, feeling like, well, a lot of my audience wants this. These videos perform really well. It would be good to keep them up. So I think, yeah, for me, that's the way that I've been able to maintain the longevity I have, is just like doing what I really care about the most.
All right. Thanks, Steph Pina, for coming on and give it a question. Let me turn it over to who should be next? I think Ryan in the chat wanted to have one. That's actually his username. I'll go ahead and unmute you, bud.
Hello?
You're unmuted.
Hello.
Hello.
Hey, Andrew.
Hello.
Hello.
For your TV show.
Good. How are you?
I'm doing good. For your TV show, Music is Everywhere, that's like on YouTube. What's your dream location that, like, if you could make it work, you would go to for your next episode?
I would love to, I don't know where it would be, but a volcano. Any semi-active volcano would be my kind of dream location as far as, like, going to somewhere interesting, recording the sounds there, or making a song there. It just seems like it would be so, you know, spectacular, both visually and you know, experientially. I have thought about that for a long time, for years, and maybe one day.
Pretty interesting answer.
Wait, before we get on to the next question, you actually just reminded me of something, which just popped in my head. So it turns out, I learned this much later in life, that video games and cartoons really tend to equip me to be around a volcano. Like, so you know how in every video game, your character, if he's near lava or a volcano, he's fine up until the second that he touches it, and then he just kind of bounces off of it. But the truth is, if you actually get towards a volcano, like, the damage starts way before that. Like, you're not just like, okay, and then if you touch the lava, you're cool. Like, that's not how heat works.
Yeah, the plumes of smoke and ash that are going to get into your lungs long before you, you know, and the falling molten rocks from the sky.
Yeah.
So don't take life lessons from Mario 64, basically, is what we're saying.
Lars, why don't we have Efrio on? I think that it'll be a good question.
Well, the one that he gave in the chat, it seemed kind of similar to Ryan's.
Let's see what happens, because I think,
okay, let's give it a
shot. I think it'll lead to a little nugget.
Hello, can you hear
Hello?
Me?
Hello.
Hello.
Welcome.
Yeah, so I'm a massive fan, and my production professor at university shows your videos in class, which have been a huge help.
Amazing.
So that's been really cool. I have a question about workflow. So there was a time when you were cranking out videos pretty much every day, and I sometimes struggle getting my feet off the ground with a project. So my question to you is, what are some of your tips in terms of finding that motivation? And a follow-up question is, when do you know when to stop a project and call it quits?
Yeah, good questions. I mean, when my YouTube channel was growing the fastest that it ever did, it was around 2016-17, and it was because I was posting super regularly. I think for about 18 months I did every Monday and Thursday, and I maybe missed four throughout the whole year and a half. And you know, that was a place that I got to after a few years of being on the platform and just about getting to full time a couple of years before that, maybe. But, you know, my channel wasn't massive at that point. It was just that I was also lucky that I could do music production stuff for income. So, you know, cobbling everything together like that. But at a certain point, I just decided, like, let's focus 100% on YouTube and see where that goes. And so I didn't really say how long I would do that for, but it felt like it was the time that it made sense to take it on in that way. And so, you know, having, you know, gotten set up in this position where I was working from home and kind of deciding what I was doing with my days, it worked to be like full on 100% YouTube all the time from the moment I woke up. And it was great. And I at the same time, I would never do it again. Because an insane grind. But, you know, it also set me up to where I am now. But I think it was, you know, kind of reflecting on where I was and where I wanted to go and, you know, hopefully seeing what would be a realistic thing to take on at the time. And then as far as like when I decided to stop that, it was just at this point, like I mentioned, a year and a half in, where it just felt like it was not sustainable, both for like the amount of hours that I had to put into it, but also because like I feel like I had used up all the easiest ideas, and so every video
for sure
was just gonna take longer.
And
you know, my production value went up, all that kind of stuff. So it kind of just felt right to start doing it when I did it, and it felt right to stop doing it when I stopped.
Yeah, that's cool. I just wanted also to say thank you. A while back, you actually listened to one of my tracks, the one that I did of the Polar Express remix, where I took samples from Polar Express, and you gave some good comments on that.
Oh, cool.
So I just want to thank you a lot for that, because that actually shaped a lot of where I go with my production now, which was really cool.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, I'm glad to hear that. I definitely, you know, I get a lot of things sent into me all the time on social media, and I can't check it all out, but I do like to when I have the time, and I love hearing what people are up to in the
community. Sure. Thank you for answering the question.
Efrio, people in the chat are saying that you have a voice for podcasting.
Oh, yes. I don't have a podcast. I've done a little bit of voice work, but I don't really talk a lot, like in terms of content wise. So
the way that your voice fluctuates is very, like, it goes up and down. Like, it's easy to listen to. Some people talk like very monotone, and then, you know, you have kind of like bounce in your voice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it was because, I don't know, when I was younger, I've been around adults for so much. I never really connected a lot with people my age. And so I've always had to find ways to make myself seem more interesting, if that makes more sense. So
like a performer.
Yes, exactly. In fact, that's what I do. I have my bachelor's in piano and violin performance. So that's my job, basically.
So this is all a lie. Just a grand illusion, is what you're saying.
Okay. Yes, everything is a lie. thank you, Andrew, again.
Thanks for asking your question.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, no problem.
Andrew, a bunch of people in the chat are saying that you're either the only reason they make music or like a huge influence. So a lot of people tuning in right now, and probably even more people tuning in, not only live, but once this episode is aired, you are to thank for all of these people who have started making music because of you. How does that make you feel?
Well, that's super cool. I love hearing that. And yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think that actually here, we could go back to one of your very early questions about why you think, or why I think a lot of people are watching my content. And I think that I'm the joy of music is the most important thing to me. Like, it's interesting being in this world and like getting some level of success here and the kind of people that I run into and seeing like what's important to different people, because for a lot of people, I think for most people, it starts off as that like joyful thing, like make music because it's so interesting and fulfilling and you love to do it. And then it becomes some people's jobs. And then for a lot of those people, then music becomes like, how do I get attention or how do I make money? And I don't think that's happened to me yet. So yeah, I know. I think, you know, hearing that other people make music because of seeing what I do means a lot because of that.
Do you think there's a wrong reason to make music? Like if it's just to get attention versus like a good reason to make music?
I mean, I think it's more about like whether you're honest with yourself, I think. I'm not going to say like it's wrong to try and make money from music. I think that it's more just it's weird if you're trying to portray yourself as some kind of super pure artist, but you know, care more about the bottom line or whatever. But, you know, I think music is this weird, complicated, beautiful thing that I think a lot of people can enjoy on a lot of different levels. And I love that I can do it as a job, but I also still do it as a hobby. And, you know, I'm making all this music that no one's ever going to hear because I'm just doing it for myself. And then I think, you know, I have friends who are fully professional at it. I also have friends who are fully hobbyists at it and have no aspiration to do anything but jam stuff and not record it and not share it. And I think, you know, that's cool too. So
I was pulling out mentally the word joy that you mentioned a couple seconds ago, and I'll just relate it to kind of a story I've told before, which is that at one point when I was doing podcasting, I realized that the worst episode that we've ever done has still been more fulfilling than every retail job I've ever had, every stupid like food service job and everything. So I do think that finding joy in your creative work is extremely important. Would you agree, Joe?
Yes, it definitely is important to have like a sense of purpose and like a reason why you're doing what you're doing, and not just because if you're just doing something just to do it, like if you're just making songs to say, oh, I've made 10 songs to my name, I've made 20 songs to my name, then you're not actually like passionate about it. It's not gonna turn out good.
No, I think once you lose the soul, then everything else is gone.
Yeah, I mean, I make these TikTok videos, and sometimes I'm just not feeling it, so I don't make videos for like even like a couple weeks, because I'd rather not put out like I don't want to put out a video that's just like, oh, he's just putting out a video to put out a video, and it's no good, and I know it's no good.
It's a balance there though, because you don't want to fall into the trap of, oh, I'm just not feeling it today, and then several days pass, several weeks pass, and it turns into inertia. And then that can be really hard to get back.
But that's why you keep some videos in your drafts, so that if you don't have something to post, then you can post something in your drafts.
I do agree. Having some content in the pocket is helpful. Okay, so yeah, I think we have time for probably maybe two or three more questions, then we'll close things up. Who is going to ask the technical question in the chat?
I thought Ken had a question.
Did he?
Ken, are you...
No, it was Plonk. Here you go, Plonk. You're unmuted. Hi.
One sec. Hey, so, Plonk.
Hey, thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having me on for like 2 seconds. In Ableton.
Okay, that's 2 seconds. Time's up. Thank you much.
You know, in Ableton, there's on the MIDI clips, you can do like pitch bending, right?
Yeah.
Something that's
real technical,
like,
I love it.
How many units is a semitone? I don't get it. I set it to like 7,000 and that sounds right, but that seems like such a weird number for it to be on.
You know what? That is a silly thing. I don't know what the resolution of MIDI is, and it's more like you set what your range, you know, the maximum and minimum that you, or not the maximum minimum, the maximum up and the maximum down that you would want to be able to bend that particular instrument. And then all you know is that if you go to the maximum, you'll be at that value, but you can't get to in between. And there really should be a better way to do that.
It's so weird. I think that was it. Thank you, Andrew.
Joe, you kind of tripped him up there at the end with that harmonica.
Yeah, well, I'm sorry I couldn't help more. It's more like we got to just overhaul all of MIDI.
Thank you for reviewing that one track I made that one time that you don't remember.
Oh, well, I'm glad I did
all
that.
Right.
If you say so.
Oh, yeah. I wanted to say, Andrew, by the way, we've had a couple guests on who have done this where they give direct fan feedback on stuff. Like, I know C-Dog VA does that as well, where he'll literally just, like, give genuine criticism on voice acting because he's a voice actor. And I think that's really helpful. I highly recommend continuing to do that because there's a lot of things I've noticed in content creation that no one tells you in the beginning. So, and there are a ton of things that I wish I could have told myself back in the day. So I find your service there very valuable.
Oh, yeah, I'm glad to hear that. I think it is so true that, I mean, there's so much to it, you know, when you're creating something, like creating a song, creating a video, like in a way that can sound so simple, but there are so many, you know, there are thousands of little tricks and tips that you can pick up that just make everything smoother. So, I mean, I enjoy doing what I do so much, and I'm glad that being able to share about that can help people.
If there was one thing that you could go back and tell yourself,
ooh, I was just about to ask that. Yeah, do you have like a rookie mistake that people always make that would be good to avoid?
Yeah, I mean, I think the story of my life is that I get too distracted by like shiny new things, and you know, that's definitely reflected in different periods of my content where there's a lot of different things that I'm trying. So I'm still, you know, working on this balance for myself, but I think I would tell myself as early as possible to try and focus more. And the way to figure out what to focus on is to figure out just what's most exciting.
Okay. Does anyone else have any other questions, by the way, before we wrap things up?
Why don't we have Ken on to ask his question?
Yes. Bring him, bring on Ken.
Oh, Plunk, you're still
all right. I'm going now, I guess. Bye. They're going to meet.
Thanks,
bye.
Thanks for coming on.
Okay.
That was funny.
By the way, Ken is our moderator, and I'm happy to let him ask a question, but I would also like to give it to people who haven't had that chance in the past. Stormrunner says that they have a question. Go ahead, Storm. You're unmuted on our end. You have to unmute yourself.
Andrew, first off, huge fan. You're such a huge inspiration for me. First video of yours I ever saw was probably the best one, Dubstep Ravens.
yeah, that was a special one.
I'm fairly new to music production, and I know I've still got a lot to learn. One of the biggest struggles for me as a, you know, learning and aspiring producer is trying to fill up your inspiration tank and keep it full. And I don't know what it is, and it just feels like sometimes you can just pluck something straight out of the ether, and then sometimes you just feel like you're digging your own grave when trying to find an idea. And I was just wondering if you just have any like tips or ideas or even suggestions on trying to maybe, you know, figure out ways to get better at trying to find inspiration per se.
Yeah, I guess one thing right off the bat is that it definitely, I don't think there is a way to have the inspiration tank at 100 all the time, but, you know, and that's totally fine. I think that there are all kinds of different ways to kind of jog it a little bit, and it almost is necessary and good to do things a bunch of different ways at different times rather than kind of, I don't know, feeling like there's a certain way to get inspiration and you know, that's the way, and I'm going to do that all the time. But yeah, I, you know, there's times where I'm just like struck by an idea and I just am really excited about it and it almost feels fully formed. I, you know, dive in and try and make it real. And then there's other times where, you know, I'm feeling creative or productive or whatever and wanting to make something, but I don't have, you know, one particular idea. And the ways that I kind of get around that are so numerous. I should probably do more videos about this, but I think experimenting with like different instruments or like, you know, plugins, like even free plugins that are out there, like kind of having a new angle on things is a really interesting way to just, you know, have your brain working in a way that it hasn't before. Or that can even apply to like techniques. Like a lot of the tracks that I've created have started where, rather than actually having inspiration, I was just trying to learn something. And I was like, oh, you know, here's a chord I've never used before. What would be an interesting way to use that chord? Or like, can I incorporate it into a piece somehow? So yeah, I think it's about finding these kind of like novel ways to almost trick yourself into getting inspiration, because you have this weird, kind of goes back to working within constraints, having some kind of little task to achieve, you know, that might be even more technical or whatever in nature, but it kind of gets the juices going.
Okay. Good answer. Good question. Thanks for coming on. I think that'll probably do it for the questions, unless someone just has an absolute banger in the chat that they want to get into.
Lars, Ken hasn't asked his question yet.
Also, I like how the chat has absolutely nothing to do with the episode right now. People are just talking about anime girl butts. Thanks, guys. Oh, Ken, do you actually have a question?
Ken, yeah, Ken was going to ask if you're still, you're unmuted, Ken.
Daft Pina had one he wanted me to ask.
Go ahead.
All right, so Andrew, have you ever made a video using mayonnaise as an instrument? And if not, could you possibly do it in the future?
Ooh, a fan request.
Oh, man, I've been wanting to do that, and it's been on the back burner for like 4 years or something ridiculous.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, everybody, I still get comments about it from time to time, but there was definitely a period of a year or two where it was like almost every video, there was at least someone asking me if mayonnaise is an instrument. And I'm like, you know, the window is probably passed for like the ripest possible time to drop that video. But just the title being "Is mayonnaise an instrument?" with that like SpongeBobby meme, you know, mixed capitals and lowercase. And then, you know, I feel like I have the skills to make that a fun piece of music as well. So it would have been perfect content, I think, in 2017, but I might have missed that boat. Or maybe one day it'll become a priority again.
I feel like the depth of your fan base is such that even if it's not as ripe as it could be today, they probably still appreciate it. Like, they probably find some sort of enjoyment from it.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, the fact that someone's asking about it now means maybe it is timeless.
Mm. They're just never going to let it go. All right.
I have one quick last little subject. Not long. Andrew, do you like to travel?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Where have been your favorite places that you've been traveling?
Man, the places that come to mind are always New Zealand and Japan and Hawaii. I've been able to go to all those places. Actually, it was all quite a while ago now, but there's just amazing stuff happening on these islands.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have family from any of those places?
I do have some family in New Zealand. So I was visiting there a little while ago, and then also explored a lot of the rest of the country. But no, not anywhere else. Japan was purely like, want to check this out. It seems so awesome. It did not disappoint. And then Hawaii was actually a trip with Habitat for Humanity, where my wife used to work. And we just went out there to help build houses. So
your wife.
That was pretty dope.
Ooh, I've noticed. That's cool. You know what? I've noticed something, which is that every time it seems like in every video where you bring up your wife, a bunch of people are like mind torn in two from that news.
I know. You know, it's the same as the swearing thing. It's just like the degree that it, the amount that it happens to come up is just enough that not all the followers are gonna catch it. And every time it happens, it's like, yeah, minds melt.
I was traveling through Europe last month, and I visited some family that I didn't know about until like right before then. I found out I have some family in Germany, and I was going to go to Germany. So I was like, hey, let's meet up. And before that, last time I was in Europe, a couple years before that, I visit the city that my grandpa was born in without even knowing it. And I was less than a mile from the house that he was born in, and I didn't even know it.
Wow.
I got back and I was like, Grandpa, I visited the city. He's like, you know, that's where I was born. I was like, what? And the time I was in Europe before that, a few years earlier, I visited the city my grandma was born in without even knowing it. I mean, I was just in the airport, but and just crazy coincidences. And then in this past time, I was taking a train from Stuttgart to Cologne. And on the way, I passed by the Rhine River, and there's a city that has the same last name as one of my relatives' maiden name. And I'm looking it up last night. I'm researching my ancestry, and it turns out if you have that last name, you're from that city. That's just the way it is.
Damn.
And so I saw it. I passed by on train, the city that my ancestors are from, and I wasn't even trying to.
I love those coincidences. That's so cool.
Yeah.
For context, Joe has kind of been on a vision quest for the last year or so to figure out his ancestry. And I think he told that story just so he could say the word Stuttgart. I think that's his favorite word.
No. Yeah. But last night I was researching my ancestry and I got farther than I've ever gone before because I went about 20 generations back.
Where are you researching this on?
It was a combination of genie.com, G-E-N-I.com, as well as a lot of help from Jewish families in Frankfurt.
And what was that URL, Joe, again? That was genie.com/T1podcast. Go there today for 10. No, that's not our sponsor.
So I found out last night, apparently, my great, 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 great grandmother's name was Joelle.
So I don't know if you needed to know that, Andrew, but he's telling it anyway.
That is so far back, though. I'm impressed because I don't think I could find out anything about my family beyond like two or three generations. But that's wild.
Well, it gets kind of spotty after a couple generations. I remember my dad did a big ancestry thing back in the day, and he got to a point where like the person only had a nickname, so he kind of lost the trail there. They didn't really take great records back then, so there's only so much you can do, I think, with that.
That was the last thing that I wanted to say. I have a note. Be sure to talk about the ancestry thing.
Oh.
That's it.
Oh, is that like a meme on Andrew's channel or?
Sure. Let's say it is.
Let's say it is. Okay.
No, it was just something that I wanted to make sure got in the episode.
Andrew, I wanted to say, by the way, that I went ahead and I looked back in the emails and apparently this episode's been brewing since September. So I'm
right.
Just really
you got in touch a while ago.
I'm really glad we were able to connect after. Yeah. It took a global quarantine to make it happen. So
I'm glad we could finally do this. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming on.
And I want to say, you know, obviously this doesn't mean that much when you already have over 1.9 million subscribers, but you've definitely earned another one. I really like your stuff.
Well, I appreciate it, guys. Thank you so much for having me and for watching the videos.
Yeah. Is there anything else you want to shout out specifically, or do you want to just direct them to your channel?
Yeah, I mean, my channel is always there, and I'm also doing a music production course that has been going really well for the last few months. So it runs a few times a year, learnmonthly.com/Andrew. That's kind of like the big thing I'm trying to work on right now. And then, hey, why not? Secret fun announcement. I'm working on a music making app that's going to see the light of day, hopefully in the summer. What? So just getting you excited no reason right now.
You heard it here first. All right. And for people who are listening in the car, how do you spell Huang? Just the normal way or?
Right. Yeah. So it's H-U-A-N-G.
Just if they want to look you up on YouTube and Spotify and all those other platforms.
Andrew Huang. I'll be right there.
Okay. Also, you're Canadian, right?
Yeah, born and raised.
Weird. Okay.
If you've been tuning in for a while and you want to support what you see, go to patreon.com/T1podcast. Join our $2 tier, just $2 a month, and you can listen to bonus episodes as well as early releases of the episodes before they come out. Now, those early releases, maybe you're thinking, I'll just wait for the episode, but those bonus episodes, you can't hear those anywhere else. And Lars, we just did a bonus episode that you said was the funniest thing we've ever recorded.
Oh, yeah. Guys, if you're a fan of the show, just trust me on this one. Do the $2 for the month, even if you don't do it again. We did a bonus episode in which we did our take on the biggest problem in the universe. I was like scream laughing at one point. It was the funniest thing we have ever done.
I was so proud. I could make Lars laugh so hard and so long.
People in the patron chat were saying it was a god tier episode, and you can only get that as a bonus. So yeah, guys, patreon.com/T1podcast. Joe, if people wanted to wear the podcast, what's the best way to do that?
Merch.t1podcast.com. At merch.t1podcast.com, you can find shirts, phones, pillowcases, and more. And when I say pillowcases, I mean pillows. I don't know why I said pillowcases. I said phone cases, and I think, you know, phone cases, pillowcases, no, but stickers and, you know, other little tchotchkes. So hop on over to merch.t1podcast.com and find something you like today. We sell them in all sizes.
Also, if you enjoyed the charming dulcet tones of Ryan, a.k.a. Daft Pina, when he gave a question on air, we did an episode with him as well. He is a YouTuber, so go check that episode out. Otherwise, I think that's going to do it.
Awesome. Thank you, guys. This was super fun, and thanks, everybody who was listening.
Joe, give us something funny.
Oh, and one more thing. Did I tell you about the nipples bleeding already?
Yeah.
We should just go out on that. Just cut it after. Did I tell you about the nipples bleeding?